From the 33, shotgun from McCord, empties the set with motion, looks left, fires left, the pass, intercepted up the sideline, comes a man with the football, and that is Rashad Biles for a pick six. Just stepped in front of Trayvor Pena and said, I'm out of here.
Third and 11. Back is McCord, throws that pass,
intercepted with the football running down the field left side. Still on his feet at the 25-20, 15-10. He's into the end zone for the second pick six of the day.
This is unbelievable.
Wow. This defense, these Sharks are eaten.
First and 10, the Cuse at their own 38. Decent field position to start this drive from McCord. He wants to throw it on first down.
Middle screen, it's intercepted on a tip. The Panthers have it, running down the right sideline. Brian Lovelace, he's at the 10, the 5, and into the end zone. A trifecta of pick sixes for the Pitt Panthers in this game.
All three linebackers, too.
Yes, it's another Donnie Football Friday. Austin City Limits Bechtold to my left. Donnie Football sitting across from me. I just realized it's also a Waynesburg reunion. Everybody
yes.
here has ties to Waynesburg University, do we not?
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do. Donnie, how are you?
I'm great, Joe. What a game for the Panthers last night. Who would have thought? I know the Steelers play Monday. I don't know if we could have anticipated starting with Pitt, though.
I know
we would talk about it, but I didn't think they'd be the above-the-fold A1 story here.
I love the fact that they are. Limits, you, everything good in there?
I'm great. That was an incrinculent game to be at last night, Joe. The building was rocking. It was really cool atmosphere.
Yeah, it was cool on TV, too. It was great. And we talked yesterday, and we'll start absolutely with Pitt today. Are you kidding me? They're sitting here at 7-0 for the first time since 1982. I was charting games last night of every team ranked in front of them. Who's going to be losing over the next 2 weeks before they play Clemson? There's a lot of losses in there. Of course, Pitt has a major test in SMU. But Donnie, I'm dreaming ahead. I'm dreaming to a Pitt-Penn State matchup in the playoffs. It's becoming at least realistic. Like I've been saying for a few weeks now, when you don't have a loss yet, you have a right to dream anything, especially when you're up around 5, 6, 7-0. If they beat SMU, then we can really start dreaming at least of an epic Pitt-Clemson showdown where Clemson could be in the top 5 and Pitt could be, I'm going to guess, as high as number 12 based on my charting of games last night. They could move up a lot, not only because if they keep winning and other teams lose, but games like last night, now all the voters got a look at Pitt absolutely destroying Syracuse. That was fun.
And this game was over before it started, Joe. And there is one particular reason why: a person that gets questioned for his jinxing ability.
Yes.
Day after day after day, put out an all-timer yesterday.
Unparalleled
and
jinxing ability.
It Let's just hear so it. Happened that he is a Syracuse alum. Our own Andrew Filippone, who has since been clowned by pretty much everybody on Twitter, including Pitt head coach Pat Narduzzi himself this morning. Here was the tweet last night from Pony right before kickoff around 7 p.m.
Yes.
Pitt fans, this is the man who will break your heart tonight. Kyle McCord, the best pocket quarterback in America. Unfortunately, he will lead the Orange to its first win in Pittsburgh since 2001. Final score, Syracuse 31, Pitt 30.
All right.
The best pocket passer in America last night threw not one, not two, not three, not four, but 5 interceptions in that game, and 3 of them got returned for touchdowns.
Kyle McPick? They call him these days in Syracuse. Let me ask you, because you know Pony well, so do I. Is he putting that out there as a favor to people, a reverse jinx that he knows will come true? In other words, when he puts that out before the game, should people say, and does he know they'll say this, thank God Pony's got this out here. We're definitely winning now.
I think he absolutely knows his powers at this point. Malzi and I had the speculation of that yesterday when he made his prediction before the guys passed it off to the pregame guys.
Yes.
Around 4:30. Pony basically said those same things on air that he eventually put out on in that tweet.
Right.
And Malzi and I kind of thought to each other right away, we know why you're doing this. You actually do want the Panthers to win.
That's what I'm thinking.
And by saying that Kyle McCord's going to have a big game, you think he won't, and he had his worst game maybe ever.
He jinxed Kyle McPick.
And
he did.
Pitt won by nearly 30, a statement win.
An unbelievable move when you think about it by Pony sacrificing himself to the social media masses in order to elevate Pitt's chance to win the game, right?
So do we think Pony took the noble route and that's the approach that
I do.
You think so?
I do.
I think he firmly believed it.
Yeah. I think he made himself a martyr, right? He made himself a pregame martyr. What did Narduzzi say?
He just sent a quote tweet of, come on, Pony, with like the facepalm guy and then also a shark emoji.
Oh, my God, that is great.
And you know who else got caught up in the fire last night? It was Intern Dom.
What?
Intern Dom came on Donnie's show.
On Wednesday night.
And had a big prediction, and he wanted his clip played after for his analysis. Very smart Intern Dom.
Do we have that analysis?
Oh, here it is.
And hey, by the way, Charlie, are you there? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
what do you Charlie, want? I better see. It doesn't have to be tonight. It can be, you know, maybe tonight, maybe tomorrow. I better see a tweet up on the fan account with my analysis of the game tomorrow. Because anytime Donnie has a guest, you know, Nick Farabaugh, Sean Morash, who are, you know, way better than me, they're always up on the account. So I better see myself. And you don't have to call me Syracuse expert, Dom. I won't, you know, make that what you have to write. But I better see something up there, Charlie. I'm just telling you.
Brilliant. That is brilliant stuff there, Limits. Limits has been on fire this week, Donnie. Have I told you that?
On his A game.
Oh, my God.
Dom.
This is great. A headline from the New York Post, complete with the video. And I quote, Syracuse QB Kyle McCord ends game from hell by... ends game from hell by sacking himself in disastrous loss to Pittsburgh. That's an all-time headline. Did you see the play?
I didn't see the play.
Because
I had the game. Pitt had it such in the bag, I was able to flip it over to Thursday Night Football at that point.
Do yourself a favor. Google that headline in New York Post and then embed it in there from later in the game after the 17 pick sixes. Is Kyle McCord literally sacking himself? Like, if you were going to look at the post-game stats, the defensive stats, it should say McCord and under sack, one of them. It should. Are you looking at it right now?
Yes.
I felt bad for the kid in a way.
Oh, it was so bad.
Oh, my God. That might be the worst quarterbacking performance by a major college quarterback ever. Is it?
I mean, pretty bad. You know, Sam Darnold saw ghosts. Kyle McCord got knocked over by a ghost.
Well, at least that was in the NFL that he got knocked over by a ghost. He did. Who got him? So the bottom line,
Casper.
Donnie, the moral of this story with Pitt last night for you is what? Like I heard, and I heard Malzi mocking me, as a matter of fact, at the beginning of the show yesterday for asking basically, what'll it take to get you interested? Him and Pony said, oh, you know, you don't want to ask a question like that. Our old boss said, never ask a question like that. Well, first of all, some of our old bosses were idiots. Second of all, for Malzi to say that I ask that question regularly, I've asked it once in the last like 5 years, and it was yesterday. What'll it take to get you interested in Pitt football? Like, where's the line? And then in the ultimate irony, they went on to ask the same question in that segment, formed a different way.
Like that was the whole first segment yesterday.
Yes. What are these guys doing, Donnie, to me, huh? And to themselves. Well, how could he possibly ask, you know, when will you be interested? Our topic is, how big is this and when will you think it's big? 412-928-9370. Donnie.
I think you have to be interested right now. Especially if you're a Pitt fan, but even... just as a fan of football in the area, because Pitt is doing something they have not done in over 40 years. You gave the stat earlier, 1982, the last time they were 7-0.
How old were you? Minus what? When were you born?
I was born in 95.
You were minus 13. Limits wasn't a gleam in anybody's eye yet, but please proceed.
But even that season a couple of years back with Kenny Pickett and his run to being a Heisman finalist, Pitt had a couple of games where they tripped up and it ruined their chances of being in the playoff.
Yes.
Because that was at one point in their sights, and they lost the game to Western Michigan. They then lost to Miami. We haven't had that game yet for Pitt, and I think people have just waited and waited and waited, like, oh, Pitt's going to drop one of these games here,
right.
And it's going to...
Right.
Like, I think last night was a good example of it. Now, was I going to put something out there, like a couple of Syracuse guys like Pony or intern Dom? No, but I could have seen, absolutely, a game where Syracuse went in there and won. Like, maybe McCord did go in there and have a
sure.
big game, and Pitt gets knocked off, because... We've heard from so many people, like on the hater side of things, I guess, or just the critical side of things, say, well, Pitt hasn't played anybody yet. Now they're going to see a guy who's thrown for 360 a game, because that's how many yards McCord has thrown for this season. They're going to see the best quarterback they've faced all year, and they pick the dude off five times. They returned three for house calls. I think the nice sign is that early in the season, we saw how explosive the Pitt offense was.
Yes.
And the last couple of games, like last night, I didn't think the offense looked all that good. I mean, they weren't even on the field all that much, though, in the first half. They barely had the football. But then in the last game against Cal, not the best offensive game, we've now seen the defense rise up two times in a row, which I think is a good sign, because the early concern I thought with some people was, well, Holstein's really exciting, Desmond Reed's really exciting, but I don't know if I can trust that defense yet.
Which was legit, right? And it's legit that the offense really struggled for all of last game and much of last night. But here's what I was thinking about, Donnie. Here's what I was thinking about. At the end of that game, when Holstein threw that dart into the end zone, that reminded me of a lot of Pickett throws from that year. I was thinking, man, if they put together this defense with that kind of offense, like this kid regains his footing a little bit, then we're really talking. He struggled badly last night. They did. But that throw, and that's why I called out my friend City Limits on Twitter last night. Did you see that?
I did not.
Yeah, we had our own little social media beef.
And he was wrong.
And he was wrong.
And I was right. He was wrong.
I was right, and he was wrong.
Nope.
He said that, why don't they take Holstein out of the game? And 1 second later, Holstein throws a touchdown pass.
No, I said they should be slowing the offense down. After that touchdown, I said take the starters out.
But my tweet was directly related to why don't they slow the offense down? 1 second later, Holstein throws a touchdown. My point being there that let's get the passing game back in order. Let's use this to get this kid back on track. But I do agree with you, Limits, that after that throw, he should have been out of the game. That he was unnecessarily risked at that point, and he winds up getting hurt.
Right.
Like, leave on a great note. He just threw a dart into the end zone. Now you've got a nice long week to prepare, extra time for SMU. Everybody's feeling good. And I thought Narduzzi went back to the well and he got burned. I don't know if you can get burned at a well. That might be a mixed metaphor, Donnie. But he got burned for it. So you were right about that.
Well, it was an option play. And he elected to take it, took a shot right near the Pitt sideline at the end. That's a hit you don't need to take up, what, 30 points at that point? Like, it's unnecessary. Why are they still in there? And before that, like... I understand the KBL offense is up-tempo, quick, and everything. You're up 25 points. Why are you snapping the ball with 25 seconds on the play clock? Let the clock bleed.
The man makes some excellent points. Do we have Narduzzi after the game on why Holstein was still in the game, Limits?
Yeah, he gave an update on Eli Holstein's health and that he should be okay.
You know, Eli's going to be fine. You know, he's in there smiling, happy, you know, jumping around. So we'll be fine. You know, just out of precaution, kept him out. And at first we just thought he had dirt in his eye, so it was a little bit more than dirt, but he's fine and happy.
The old rub some dirt in it.
Literally,
had
in
some
that
dirt
case,
in his eye.
So I guess that's encouraging. You know, we never know what these types of injuries, assuming it was like a head injury of some sort, how it'll manifest over the next few days, but they have plenty of time till the next game. And man, they're in a great spot. 41-13, everybody gets to see it. And here's what I was talking about, Donnie. As I'm looking ahead, these glazed donuts are unbelievable. Did you guys partake in the donut fest from Oklahoma Bakery?
I did not. Oh, yes. I love them. Every Friday, I look forward to it.
What did you have, Limits?
I had a glazed donut.
So did I.
Like you.
The same exact thing. I think you and I took both the glazed donuts. Listen to this. I went in and started looking at teams ahead of Pitt. They're 19th, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's an eye-opener for voters. Boise State, 17. At UNLV tonight. Can watch that game at 10:30. CBS Sports Network, Donnie. That could be a loss. Boise State doesn't have many potential losses on their schedule, but they lose tonight. Pitt's ahead of them. Notre Dame, even at 12, has some tough games coming up, including Navy. Indiana, they're number 13. They're a major surprise, much like Pitt. But they got before Pitt plays Clemson, they've got at, you know, they got Big Ten games, Washington, yep. Michigan State, Michigan. And then the day that Pitt plays Clemson, they got to visit Ohio State. They're not winning. They're not going into Columbus and winning, for God's sakes. But they could. They could actually be 10-0 going into that game. And then all kinds of other teams, if you look at it. Pitt could, Ole Miss. Ole Miss is number 18. They've got Oklahoma right in front of them. And I know Oklahoma's down this year. Are they down this year? Yeah, they're 1-3 in the SEC.
Yeah, they just got whooped last week, too.
But Ole Miss is 1-2 in the SEC. They could easily lose before that game. Alabama is 15. They're ahead of Pitt. They play 21 Missouri on Saturday, plus some other games coming up. Pitt could be ahead of Alabama soon.
And Bama's in a bad way, I think. Like,
yes.
They're leaking oil bad.
Could I provide a hot take for you guys?
May I mention one more team?
Yes.
And then I'll throw to you. Texas A&M, they're 14. Get ready with a little clip, my friend, because guess who they play this week? The Fighting Brian Kellys. But we're not. We're talking about different things. We're talking about Pitt moving ahead of Alabama and Texas A&M, who's at 14. And Donnie, Kansas State is ahead of them. Kansas State is at 16. They've got games. I don't even know how good these teams are. Before Pitt plays Clemson, they play at Houston. They play Arizona State. Is Houston any good? I don't know. They beat TCU. I don't know. They all suck, right? There. You know, you understand my point.
Yes.
That we could have, and it's starting to crystallize, number five, number three, not unbeaten. Number three, Clemson. Against number 12 and unbeaten Pitt right around the corner at that stadium. Limits, your hot take?
I think the Pitt Panthers are the second best team in the ACC.
Ooh!
Behind the Clemson Tigers. I think Miami is a fraud. Ooh. Cam Ward is having a good season.
Clip
Fine.
That one, Donnie, and send it south.
This one you
They'll
can
They'll be
clip.
Coming after Limits.
Miami this season. Okay, they stomped Florida. Congrats. They're down in the dumps. They barely beat Virginia Tech. They should have lost that game. Wasn't it a Hail Mary that decided it? Virginia
yes.
Tech had them on the ropes. Miami should have lost at home. They follow that up by Cal blowing like a 3-score lead in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Like 17 points. And then they were a touchdown. They won by a touchdown in Louisville. Louisville, another game Miami could have lost on the road. They are just asking to lose a game very soon. They play Georgia Tech, Duke, Florida State, teams that suck.
I know.
So when they get to the ACC championship game, I think they're going to lose.
But here's the problem, Donnie. And it's a significant one. SMU looks like they're pretty good. BYU I've seen, and they're very good. SMU lost to them 18-15. Other than that, they're putting 59, 66, 40, 34, 42 on people. They won at Louisville. Pitt needs to win that game.
I think that's,
and I'm not sure they will. You know, they could even play well and lose that game.
I think that's their most difficult game left, to be honest. I think if they beat SMU, I actually have confidence they will beat Clemson in a couple weeks at home. I think that will be kind of reminiscent to a few years back. I know Clemson wasn't at the height of their powers. They had fallen off a hair. They were still Clemson. Okay, they were still good. They still had a good defense, not quite what they had on offense. But that time that they came into Pittsburgh and Kenny Pickett was on his ride and Pitt just kind of beat them down.
It was only,
I think, a 10-point game, but it looked dominant on the side of Pitt. That's what I think could happen in a couple of weekends. I also had another thought pop into my head, Joe, when I am looking at the teams ahead of Pitt. And this will put some Panther fans in a conundrum in a couple of weeks because I know it's not this weekend, but it's next weekend. And it actually pertains to the top team for our pal Limits. Do Panther fans find themselves possibly rooting for Penn State to beat Ohio State next weekend? That would give Ohio State a second loss. Now, it would be two losses to teams in the top three. The only other Ohio State loss was to Oregon. But then let's say they lose to Penn State. That would maybe push another team out of that top 12 once we get close to college football playoff rankings.
Ohio State? You're saying could be pushed out?
I think so. I mean, there's at least more of a chance. I think it actually would hurt more if Ohio State wins. You have Ohio State, that would be, what, 7-1 or 6-1. Penn State would be the same record.
Yeah.
So it's like you really get no movement
there.
That is
a conundrum because the other side of it is you want Penn State to be an at-large team so that they host Pitt in the first round.
There's that too. But I mean, I think Pitt fans would take just getting in.
For sure.
Yeah.
Like, but do you think Pitt would have to be undefeated to be ahead of a two-loss Ohio State, right?
They would. Which is why it's so difficult, because the other thing that we end up getting into, the amount of people, once we get into crunch time with the college football rankings, we always get the crowd that says, well, if you put a three-loss Alabama on the field with a undefeated or one-loss Pitt team, who would you pick in that scenario? And it's like, well, that's not always the scenario. One of these teams should have taken care of their business.
Here's what I say to all that. How awesome it is to be in the scenarios and not 3-9 or 7-6. Or even the Pickett year, which was amazing and memorable. As far as the biggest prizes, it ended when they lost to Western Michigan in week 3 or whatever it was. No, nobody goes to a playoff after losing to Western Michigan. It's mathematically and hypothetically impossible. Now, as we sit here today, Limits, anything's possible, as Kevin Garnett once said. Anything is possible for Pitt right now. And I will revel, absolutely revel, in sitting here for at least a week, maybe more, contemplating the scenarios, the possibilities, things like the conundrum that Donnie just brought up. Isn't it great to be in a college football conundrum?
Very much so. Pitt, Penn State, I would sell my soul to go to that game. Maybe not that hot. Maybe not that extreme.
How much would you pay for a Limits soul, Donnie?
Maybe a couple $1,000.
Yeah, I would.
How much do you think that soul's worth?
I don't know.
Can you sell souls?
I think it's priceless. Yeah. I don't know. I don't think so. I know you would, though. And I hesitate to ask the question, but in honor of Malzi and Pony and our former boss, Ryan McGuire, I ask, when does the needle move for you on Pitt? It takes a lot in this town to do that. It didn't move. I think you alluded to this, Donnie. It really didn't move in the Pickett year until the lead up to the Clemson game, when it was like, wait a second, this guy might win the Heisman. Clemson's coming to town for the first truly big home game in a long time. And then we revert to being what we are, what a lot of towns are, which is an event town. That's how Pitt basketball became the hottest ticket around here. So I think it is a viable and really good question if you're out there and you've been sort of on the fence. I have. There's Pitt games in recent years. I'll tape it. maybe take a look at the highlights. Why would I spend my time watching that? We're not going to talk about it. And now, last night, I'm riveted to the television. I'm riveted to the scenes of the student section going absolutely crazy. And you're telling me, how many, what was the official attendance and what did it look like?
Well, I mean, the upper decks were pretty much
empty. They looked empty.
Yeah. But especially like the top left corner of the stadium, like behind the end zone, was empty. The tops maybe had 10% of it.
Well, I can tell you this. If number 5 Clemson comes to town to face an unbeaten number 12 Pitt, those upper decks won't be empty.
47,000 was the official attendance.
Yeah. Well, Jerry was telling us 55. I didn't believe that from the start.
No.
That has to be a sellout or damn close to it if Clemson comes in here and that game has the heights that it has.
Yeah, people will get excited.
That would also be, I don't know what that whole weekend looks like because we're a few weeks out from it on the college football slate. That has to be a game that's one of the biggest in that entire weekend.
Absolutely. 5 against 12 or so? It's by definition would be a huge game. But man, that SMU, the visit to SMU before then could turn out to be a mega bummer, but maybe not. That's why I think that last touchdown pass for Holstein, if you put together, you know, the best of Pitt's offense this season or close to it, and the best of what we've seen from that defense, people had Kyle McPick as a Heisman Trophy candidate, Donnie. He was on some people's lists. He ain't no more. Not unless they're awarding that trophy to the most pick sixes, which last I checked, they're not limits. 412-928-9370. When does Pitt capture your attention? Still waiting? When do you make it a priority to watch Pitt football? That's a legitimate question. It's not urging anybody or anything like that. Like, when does it become, oh, yeah, Pitt SMU, I got to plan part of my weekend around that. You know what I mean? Nobody's been doing that for a bit on Pitt. That rhymed, Donnie. Off the top, presented by JP Roofing and Siding. We got a lot happening on today's show. We're going to take your calls next, but also move on to the NFL. So while we were watching Pitt last night, there was Cooper Kupp, but Donnie, and I know this is a Donnie Football Friday, we have to briefly weigh in on an extremely unusual situation with your Pittsburgh Penguins. I covered this team as a beat writer for a number of years and as a columnist for many, many more. I have never seen a situation like this. They have a $28 million goaltender who went out west with them. His hometown, basically, the Edmonton area, at least, you know, where he played his junior hockey, all that stuff. He's been sent back to Pittsburgh. Headline in the Post-Gazette, Penguins send Tristan Jarry back home to Pittsburgh in latest twist in goalie competition. I'll say it's a twist. Matt Wenzel saying, Mike Sullivan said it was part of the team's plan going into the road trip to have Jarry leave the team Wednesday, so he could get in some one-on-one training with director of goaltending, John Elkin. That's an interesting plan. Hey, Tristan, let's go all the way out to Western Canada, and then right when we get there, we'll send you back to work with John Elkin. What? We spoke to Tristan about it. He bought into it, and we'll go from there, Sullivan said. Donnie, what is happening here? This is like sending, you know, Ben, you know, you go out for a West Coast trip where you're going to stay for a couple weeks. I know this would never happen. Mm-hmm. You play the Raiders and then the Chargers. And in week two, you try to act like it's normal that you just sent Ben home to work with a quarterback coach. What is happening?
Yeah, or I think you can maybe make a baseball comparison, like it's a West Coast swing. You have like 9 or 12 games out west and one of your best players is going through a slump and you just send the guy home like 2 games in.
He
hasn't even played.
Right. The guy at the most important position, a $28 million goalie. Nothing to see here, Sully. He also claimed the other day that he wasn't a healthy scratch. Technically, maybe he wasn't, but he's been buried here.
Yeah, I mean, there's clearly something going on, and I think a lot
he
of it
stinks.
Comes down.
That's what's going
on. Yeah. I mean, and I've never been a Tristan Jarry guy, so I've almost feel bad at this point that I'm piling on because I thought the contract that he signed and that they offered him, I don't blame him for signing it. I think anybody would sign that. the contract that he was offered on the first day of free agency in 2023, I thought was ludicrous, especially given the length of the deal, 5 years for that. And now here we are at the beginning of the second year after he was benched at the end of last season and they had the backup.
Right.
Playing games down the stretch.
And apparently tried
to
trade him in the offseason. Apparently tried, reportedly tried.
I was on the other night, Joe. I had Jesse Marshall on. I don't know if you've ever had
him on. Yeah, the Marshall plan. Yeah.
And he said that he would not expect Jari to be on the roster by season's end. He said the only way, though, that they find a trade partner, this would have to be like, hey, we will eat some of this guy's salary. We have to basically admit our mistake.
We'll eat all of his salary if you'll just take him.
Yeah,
plus, we'll pay you an extra $10
million. And what we have, and they'll probably have to throw in a sweetener with the deal, like another pick or something, I don't know, and just say, please, for the love of God, take this off this our hands.
This is the Jeff Carter situation all over again, except with a guy allegedly in his prime who's getting paid $28 million, who's supposed to be the guy at the most important position. And the great Kyle Dubas, defended by all of Penguins media over and over again, never got the goaltending right in Toronto, so he kept them from maybe making a run at a cup. And then one of his first big moves here was to ruin the goaltending here. Nice job, Kyle.
Yeah, I mean, we heard coming in like, oh, this guy is he's the boy wonder, the boy genius. He's the Theo Epstein of hockey, and they are now barely they're a year plus. Into this, they're into the second season under this new regime, and
he's the Ben Charrington of hockey, and this guy's his Rowdy Tellez.
And the goalie who you signed to a 5-year contract worth what, 5.375?
Yeah, $28 million
per year.
Yeah,
he has
more.
Been benched for the second season in a row, and this time it took 3 whole games to get benched in 2024. They're in a bad way. I mean, obviously, there's something mentally going on with the player, too. I mean, that's half the battle in pro sports that sometimes people forget. I mean, that's clearly the one of the biggest issues here. But this is the most important player on the ice for most teams. And the Penguins have to rely on
it's
a backup
ridiculous.
And a player in Joel Blomqvist, who I would love to see play well, but I don't think even he expected to be put in the position he's been put in.
Limits calls him Yoel, which might be the right pronunciation. Yoel Blomqvist. I go with Joel, like you. Limits, want to defend the Yoel? He's on the phone. The part that gets me still is the second paragraph. Coach Mike Sullivan said after Thursday's practice at Rogers Place, and for those of you who don't know, Rogers Place is in Edmonton, and for those of you who don't know, Edmonton is way off on the other side of North America, that it was part of the team's plan going into the road trip to have Jari leave the team Wednesday so he could get in some one-on-one training with director of goaltending John Elkin.
That's what completely bogus.
That sounds like a Matt Canada game plan there. What in the world are we doing here?
I mean, I get that they have to say these things, but I don't know. I think in that case, you could at least say, like, hey, Tristan's clearly going through some stuff. I mean, the thing is, it's clear to everybody. Like, and it's a guy you're not even playing right now. You're having him sit up in the press box. So, I don't know. Maybe a little bit more on the side of, like, yeah, I mean, things clearly are going on here that he's trying to figure out. We're going to send him back. I mean, if that was in your plan, why did he even make the trip?
But that's the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here's the plan, Tristan. We want you to get on the plane, go all the way across North America, but just till Wednesday. Then we'll fly you back across North America to work out with a guy nobody's ever heard of, who's our director of goaltending. When you have a goaltending coach, who I think is with the team, is he not? I don't know what the hell's happening. It's not Donnie Hockey Friday. It's Donnie Football Friday. Let's get back to football, if we will. And the other thing happening last night, and I was toggling between the two, Donnie, I had the football game, the NFL game on my laptop on Amazon Prime, which I was very proud of my technological expertise last night, and the Pitt game up on the television. So our reading on Cooper Kupp, 5 catches, 51 yards, 8 targets, a touchdown, a big first down catch late. Made a mistake late by stepping out of bounds. for me, coming off the high ankle sprain, he didn't look like he was 100% to me, like that spry, but he looked pretty damn good. And I think a guy who's that dependable getting open for Russell Wilson and unlocking the middle of the field would be unbelievable for them. And last night didn't do anything to dissuade me from that opinion. You?
But here's what's not good about last night, Joe. The Rams won the game.
That's the problem.
And Matt Stafford looked great because he had his two best targets back on the field. Nacua had a nice game in his return, 7 for 106. You just went over Cooper Kupp's numbers. Stafford threw for really like a vintage Matt Stafford night. Over 275, 4 touchdowns. He had an interception in there. But he had clearly his best game of the season, and he was doing so earlier on without his two best receivers on the field. We know that can be difficult for quarterbacks depending on the situation. The other thing is that the Rams, even though they were off to a slow start, the NFC West is wide open.
Yeah.
San Francisco hasn't taken control. Arizona's been a fun, frisky team. Seattle started 3-0, but they're 1-3 since. If I'm the Rams, I'm just clearly holding on to this guy. You won last night. You beat one of the best stories in football, a team that through this point in the season hasn't looked like a fluke in Minnesota. You beat them by 2 scores, and I'm saying, why would we get rid of this guy? I think we can win our division.
I agree with that. You still root for them to lose to Seattle, hopefully, but maybe they're thinking we have a new number one guy in town because clearly Puka is the guy. Now, he was great last night. Maybe they're thinking that, like, we can get by without him, and what are we doing with him anyway? He's 31. It's not Sean McVay's decision. It's be somebody above him who might say, yeah, there aren't, like, guarantees necessarily, I think, beyond a $5 million guarantee for next season, nothing in 2026. But still, why not get rid of this money while we can, pick up a little of it, and just move on from Cooper Kupp? We're in it in this division, but are we a championship team? I don't know. I don't know how they're feeling. But there's at least how many more games? Is that the last game before the deadline, their game against Seattle? Deadline is November 5th. Their game against
Seattle.
Should
be 2 more, I think.
No, just 1. At Seattle.
Oh, yeah, it would be next week.
And then they have a game against Miami. See, then they have Miami and New England, Donnie. You're probably right. They go in and beat Seattle. They're 4-4, and then they have the worst of the AFC. They have the AFC least after that.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, well, Matt Stafford looked like his usual self last night, and shockingly, it's because the two best receivers were back on the field, and they looked to be mostly back to full health.
Yeah.
And we know how Les Snead, he's the guy pulling the strings there for the Rams. He's normally uber aggressive. Like, hell, for all we know, they could get to a point where he's trading picks to acquire a player,
right,
to try and put the Rams over the top, because he's the guy a few years ago that infamously said, F them picks at their Super Bowl parade. So the thought was, okay, maybe he wants to reacquire some draft capital since that's not normally his style. But that, like, my worry in all of this all along, okay, it was fun. It's fun for the Steelers to be in this conversation, certainly fun for us because we can come in and talk about it every day. But in the back of my mind, I was thinking, well, this is a team who the record doesn't look good, but given the circumstances of their division and everything else, they're not out of it. I don't know why they would trade the guy.
Well, the thought was going into Vegas, going into the games against Vegas and Minnesota, that, man, if they lose these two, the season's done. Well, they won both. So you're probably right about that. And then that leads to a question that I'll ask you in a moment here. First, the 50-minute mark brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge, Route 19, Peters Township. Celebrating 50 years in the South Hills, listen to the Starkey Show every Wednesday to hear about Starkey's Card of the Week from the Baseball Card Castle in Cranberry. Contests run every Wednesday through Friday at noon at the 93.7thefan.com contesting page. Clearly, the Steelers think and have thought that they need another receiver. So who's next? Who's still out there, Donnie, if this Cooper Kupp thing, if it was ever realistic, if it's less so now, then who's up? Who's next? Who's on the board?
I think it's one of the guys from either of the New York teams, which both of those teams conveniently play in New Jersey. One of them, the Steelers played last Sunday. The other one, they play this Monday. I think you're looking at a Mike Williams or Darius Slayton.
May I read you some names?
Go ahead.
USA Today. Limitless Wonder, if you'd like to jump in here. Just give me a yes or a no on interest. We'll get into whether it's realistic and all that stuff afterward, okay? Donnie goes first. Wonder Twin goes second. I'll go third. Christian Kirk.
I'd be interested there for sure.
Mildly interested, yes.
Interested, absolutely. Mike Williams.
Yes.
Yeah, but not emphatically.
Did you hear him throw in that little caveat?
Oh, he hasn't been strong about the first two.
He's a caveat master. Not really. I'm not a big Mike Williams guy. Can't get Deontay Johnson because of NFL rules. Treylon Burks.
I'll go mildly there. I mean, the age is still attractive to me.
What are his
numbers
this year? Do you know?
I don't think good. I don't think they've been good for the last few seasons. That would be like truly like a hope and pray kind of
project
there.
That would be like a, you know, yeah, the Steelers have had projects like that at various positions. Let's take somebody else's high draft bust and see if they can flourish here.
He only has four grabs for 34 yards. No. The numbers are worse
than
Austin and Jefferson.
Austin?
Calvin Austin.
Oh, I thought you were making reference to our guy here at Waynesburg. Did he play football?
No.
Limits?
No, he's not much smaller, though, than Calvin Austin.
See, I might be taller than Calvin Austin.
Go back at him.
He is taller. He is taller than Calvin Austin. The weight might be close.
Treylon Burks interest you?
No, not at all.
Jonathan Mingo?
Nah.
No.
Not to be confused with Barkevious Mingo, the old Browns pass rusher.
I'd rather have him at receiver. Adam Thielen.
That interests me. I know the age would be concerning, but you pull up what that guy has done even in the last couple of seasons. He was a 1,000-yard receiver last year in the worst offense in football.
Wonder Twin?
I'd be very interested in Adam Thielen. He would probably be the top of that next-tier receiver if they can't acquire Cooper Kupp.
Well, what's the deal, with him? Ton of Thielen. What's the deal with him? He hasn't played since September 22nd. What's the problem?
He's dinged up. I don't know if it's an ankle.
I don't know. I don't know about him. But I would be interested. You know, he sort of fits in the Cooper Kupp mold in that he's a guy that you can trust. He's going to get open, that type of thing. And last year, he had 103 catches. Did you already mention that?
I just said he had 1,000 yards, but yes.
Yeah, he's on IR with a hamstring injury.
See, that concerns me. If I was guaranteed health, he would actually top my list.
He's back at practice, but just in a limited capacity.
What did you say to that?
Yes, I would absolutely do that.
Yeah, me too. Well, considering health?
Well, yeah, I mean, if he's already back to being a limited participant in practice, and it's not like a Russell Wilson week one limited participation at practice, then I would think he'd be back in a week.
Now he's a doctor, this guy, Donnie. Back
in
a week?
A man of many talents.
Darius Slayton.
Yes.
Yes.
Why was that a yes that wasn't emphatic?
I don't think Darius Slayton is as good as everybody makes him out to be. And even Jordan Rahan yesterday told us that it's basically Malik Nabers and then nothing in the Giants offense. He didn't mention Darius Slayton as a viable weapon at all, even like a name drop for him.
See, maybe I'm overly harsh, but that's just how down I am on the other options besides Pickens at receiver. I understand that Van Jefferson had a touchdown last week. I understand that Calvin Austin had a nice grab where he got to run a little bit. Take away those two plays and look what those guys had. Austin had one catch. That one catch was all he did. And Van Jefferson had, I think, 2 for 15.
It seems like with Darius Slayton, a lot of the passes that go his way don't end up getting caught.
He has drop issues.
Yeah, that. Plus, there are years, and it might not be his fault. This could be quarterbacking. I'm just saying, when you have 96 targets and 50 receptions one year, 58 and 26, 71 targets and only 43 catches, something is majorly wrong there.
I think he would frustrate people, but the price for these guys won't be high.
See, he doesn't fit the profile of what I think they need, so I'm not interested. I want a veteran-style, dependable security blanket type. That doesn't mean somebody who's slow and can never make a play, but you know what I mean. I think a Cooper Kupp, Amari Cooper was the guy for me. Some balls, but Amari Cooper is an elite route runner, and I think mostly a guy you can really depend on. I think he's a borderline star. I don't know if the Browns would have traded in division, but there's a certain kind of receiver I want, and this guy ain't it.
So I think based on your description, I know the injury would make it tough, but that sounds like you're an Adam Thielen guy.
Absolutely. Like I said, if I could get health assurances on him, he would, other than Cooper Kupp, who I don't think, who is getting less realistic by the day, he would top my list.
That's also where I think we're seeing more and more, like, the conditional draft picks are becoming like the new craze in the NFL. Like,
yeah.
It's not just traditional, like, seventh round pick. That could be like a seventh that becomes a sixth if the guy plays 65% of the snaps or something like that.
Yeah.
So you have an assurance there that this guy stays mostly healthy. And I don't know, maybe even throw in a caveat like the Steelers win a playoff game, because I know that that's something that's tied into the Devontae Adams deal, for example.
Now, Christian Kirk may fit into that category I like as well. I think the word dependable is attached to him. Does he drop a lot of balls, Donnie?
I don't know what his drop rate is. I mean, I think he's a pretty solid receiver.
I mean,
though.
Listen to what I just said about Slayton, and now consider 103 targets, 77 receptions. That's a lot different. Although last year it went down a little bit. I like Christian Kirk.
And he's clearly turning into less of a threat in that Jags offense.
That's what anybody. That's a
Brian
disaster.
Brian Thomas has become a star.
But the guy has, you know, the last couple of years, over 100 first downs. He's a nice two receiver, I think. All right, let's get to Ray Fittipaldo. Fan weather brought to you by Sun Chevrolet. Visit Sun Chevrolet, Washington Road, McMurray, or at sunchevy.com. High of 68 today with sunny skies. So we have a lot to talk about in regard to the Monday night game. We're going to have a numbers game at 11:30. Donnie and I go head-to-head who has the best number regarding this game. But first, Ray Fittipaldo, who unwittingly became the center of the story this week, Donnie, back at the news conference when we couldn't tell if Mike Tomlin said attitude or latitude, to quote the famous Jimmy Buffett song. And then did you hear about this? Brian Batko in the locker room the other day saw Tomlin and walked up for a clarification on that. Did you hear about this?
I heard that you guys discussed it, but I didn't know what the result was.
Batko, the savvy old news hound, goes up to Tomlin in the locker room.